Good morning or afternoon, or I got no idea what it is anymore because of the jet lag and the travel and everything. But I am in America, in Texas, and this is also why this update is quite late, because of travel and things. So I'm in yet another hotel room, which has been a bit of a theme this year. Although, fortunately, this year my wife has come with me as well, so she is downstairs enjoying a very nice breakfast, and I am getting to actually enjoy travelling with someone rather than being in another sort of, like lonely place on my own, I guess. So that's actually really neat. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a moment, and just for curiosity's sake, because I know this probably looks kind of dark here, this is what Texas looks like today. It's just like rain and miserable weather all over the place, unfortunately. But that's okay. I'll make up for that when I get home. So, a few little things about what I've been doing here. So, we flew over from Australia earlier in the week. I forget what day it was. We left on Thursday and we arrived on Thursday just before we left. So, that's the way it works when you fly east from Australia. 23 hours door to door, which is pretty typical for Australia. Bit better than going to Europe. And we, excuse me. The door-to-door bit was from our home on the Gold Coast all the way through to San Antonio. So we went to San Antonio first. I did a talk at Texas Cyber Summit yesterday on Friday. So that was a little event there in San Antonio, first year they'd run that one. So that was fun. I did many of my usual cyber things. Whilst we were in San Antonio, and again, sort of having the pleasure of having Kylie with me, we get to actually do some enjoyable things rather than just sit there and do email, etc. the whole time. We went and had barbecue. Now, I've had way too much barbecue in Texas the last few days, and I feel like I need to spend about a week on a treadmill after the last three barbecues, because we did Thursday night barbecue. Friday, we drove from San Antonio to Dallas, barbecue for lunch. Got to Dallas, went to a speaker dinner for DevFest weekend, which I'm about to go and speak at now. Wouldn't you believe it? It was barbecue again. And don't get me wrong, the barbecue has been epic. It's been absolutely amazing. But I could probably do with a meal without meat just for the next couple. So anyway, it's been fun being here in the US. We decided to drive because, frankly, airports just get so freaking repetitive. So we drove from San Antonio to Dallas, which was about 400 hours yesterday. And it's funny sort of driving around because you've got time to, I guess, take in a little bit more of the scenery, have a bit of a think about the little differences in the US compared to Australia. And yeah, one of the big differences is driving here is so much nicer than driving in Australia. Australia's got a very, very strange driving culture where on the one hand, they're infatuated with speed. If you go 3 kilometers an hour over the limit in Victoria, our southern state, you'll get a ticket. The government's got a very different attitude to many different, many other places in the world, particularly Europe and in parts of the US like this. It was just a much more relaxing drive. People were going at a natural pace that suited them. Some of them were faster, some of them were slower. It was a much more enjoyable place to drive. Interestingly, never saw people get angry. This is one thing that happens a lot in Australia. And again, particularly in places like New South Wales and Victoria. Less so where we live because everyone's very chilled out, too much so sometimes. But, you know, there was no sort of aggression when someone cut in tightly or wasn't keeping right, as it may be here. And trust me, that bugs me when people don't stay in the right lane. But there's just not the anger. And it got me sort of thinking about these sort of subtle differences. And it's interesting how different it is to come to somewhere like this. And it's not always obvious. You know, sort of things like that, little things like the indicator lights are red. And this is kind of odd because I don't see this anywhere else in the world. And I'm sure someone will chime in and say, I'm from, you know, Honduras or somewhere I haven't been, and go, yeah, they're red there. But not in Australia, not in Europe. They're orange, and you can tell the difference between the indicator light and the brake light. Or you go to a bathroom here, and the doors don't go all the way to the bottom. And we're sort of Googling this, going, why is this? What is it about America? And the Google said, one time someone slipped and bumped their head, and then no one knew that they were in there, and then there's things where they don't build them all the way to the bottom so you can see that someone's lying on the floor in a toilet. I don't know, little things like that. The tipping thing. So the tipping thing is very, very different here. I understand the reasons for it in the US due to minimum wages and things like that, but it's very, very different. Again, to the rest of the world, and again, I'm sure someone will say there's an exception, but certainly Australia, Asia, Europe is very, very different to that. So it's always interesting coming to different places and just seeing these little nuances, both good and bad. All right, so moving on a little bit. Other things. So yesterday, I think it must have been yesterday, I saw that the Twitters get very enthusiastic about Kanye West visiting the president and then unlocking his phone to show Trump something about a plane. And of course, wouldn't you believe it, he's unlocked his phone with a gazillion cameras, like pointed at him. Pin number is 60s. And I thought that there's sort of one clear, obvious observation here, which is that 60s isn't a very good pin. And that would be the focus of the discussion. And we'd all go, oh, that's a crap pin, and everyone would move on. Now, being what it is, on the internet, many people had many different views about different aspects of this. And these views ranged from the expected, what a ridiculous pin, why would you do that, through to I was having a discussion with someone where they said, like, 60s is no worse than any other combination of numbers. And I think what they were trying to say is, like, mathematic predictability, etc. 60s, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, like, whatever. You've got the same likelihood of randomly selecting any of those numbers. But that's not how humans work. You know, like, we know that humans fall back to patterns. So patterns of either the same numbers or a keyboard sequence or any of these things. And clearly, you and I know, as humans who could look at a pin like that, we would know that that's not a very good pin. So I don't think there's really any position to argue that 60s is better or equivalent, rather, to any other pin. So there's definitely not that. Other people got cranky because I saw this one thread where someone was very cranky because they said, you shouldn't be getting upset at Kanye. Isn't it good that they've got a passcode? Well, I just don't know that that's the right argument to be having here. It's like, well, they've got a passcode, but if you're going to put a pin on, why not actually put something like reasonable on? That seems to be a reasonable idea. And then there's the other aspect, of course, which is that he was on an iPhone X, possibly an iPhone XS, because they look the same. It's got Face ID. Why would you not just unlock with Face ID? And I saw a few people say Face ID had failed, which is possible. And if it fails, then it does fall back to pin. And then, of course, that led through to the discussion of people arguing about the viability of biometrics. And by viability, I mean arguments around the likes of, here's a classic one. They'll say, what if your face is stolen? You know, like people go, what if your face is stolen? Because if your face is stolen, then someone else can unlock your phone. Now, first of all, I'm not sure how someone steals your face. I have seen that movie, the movie Face Off. Maybe they mean like that. What they probably mean is that if someone could get a clear enough picture of your face, or you often hear it with fingerprints as well, people go, I've got a clear enough a set of your prints, then I can authenticate as you. Now, there are many different problems with that argument. Oh, incidentally, coffee is very different in the US as well. We probably best not get into that one here. Many different aspects to this argument about your biometric thing being stolen. And the first one is that let's say someone has a perfect representation of your fingerprints. Now what? Well, obviously the concern is that they can go and reproduce the finger and then authenticate as you. And of course that is viable, but there are several really important factors here. So one is the sophistication required to do that. Now, is that going to be something that your threat actors are going to be able to do? Now, what I mean by your threat actors is that for the vast majority of people, who they're most worried about logging into their phone is going to be the person that steals it off the bar, or their kids, or an estranged spouse, or something like this. It's not going to be the NSA. It's not going to be super smart security folks who can reproduce enough gummy bears and melt them down and blast them onto PCB boards and then use acids and things like to recreate fingerprints. And this is some of the stuff that we have seen in the past as well. And don't get me wrong, like that stuff is super, super cool, and there are certainly those out there for whom that is their threat actor. But it's almost certainly not you, and it's certainly not the people who, by and large, are buying these devices. So, you know, there's the issue of who are you trying to protect your things from. Then, of course, there's the other issue, which is that usually biometrics, certainly the iPhone, after X number of failed login attempts using a biometric means, they will fall back to PIN. So if you are going to go and try and reproduce a biometric device or a biometric feature, such as a fingerprint or a face, you better get it right pretty quickly, otherwise you're going to be falling back to PIN anyway. We saw things like after the launch of Face ID, a Vietnamese security company post a video demo of authenticating to the phone using a mask. And in fact, in the video, they have like this mask with a towel or something over the front of it, camera pointing at the face. They whip the towel off and the thing authenticates. And it looks very good in video, it looks very convincing. And I remember Dan Gooden from Ars Technica really hammering these guys on it, going, okay, how did you do this? And where Dan was going with this is he was asking questions along the lines of, what access did you need to the face in order to be able to reproduce this mask? And this is a very important question too. So what he's sort of getting at there is that Face ID has things like depth sensors. So when I look at this camera here to authenticate, it's looking not just at what my face looks like in the two-dimensional realm, but what are the depths of my eyes and my nose and my mouth and everything else. So what did you need to do with the face in order to get that? Was a flat photo enough? Did you have to like drug someone and hold them down and 3D model their face? Like, how is this done? Because this is important too. Like, what do you need in order to be able to reproduce this? So the whole premise of, you know, if someone gets a scan of your face or your finger or something, well, then it's game over and now you're basically screwed for life, just doesn't hold water. And you'll see statements like people will say, oh, biometrics, they should be identity and not authentication. Effectively saying your face is like a username and it's not a password. And I sort of, with a couple of people, I got to the point where I went, I don't care what you call it, you use it to log on. You know, and it's not a secret. It's not the way it works. So I think people do like doing a bunch of mind losing there. That actually the last one, and then I'll go on to something different. The last one here is you'll hear people say, and again, this is a very American thing, they'll say biometrics are not protected by whatever amendment it was of the Constitution, which effectively means that authorities can ask you to unlock your device with your face or your finger, but they can't ask you to do the same with the PIN. And the examples I get from people about this are always really weird. So, for example, people say, they'll ask me, they'll go, hey, you're flying into the US. You know, if you're flying into the US, let me rephrase that. If you're flying into the US, would you allow your phone to still be authenticated to with biometrics? Because you could turn up at the border and they might force you to unlock your phone. And I'm going, hang on a moment, let me think this through. What you're saying is, would I possibly, by disabling biometrics, turn up at the border, they ask me to unlock the phone, and then I go, no, I won't, because I've got a PIN. Like, what do you think they're going to do? Seriously, I turn up there and the customs are like, okay, unlock your phone. I'm like, no. It's not going to end well for me. Whether I use my face or whether I use a PIN, it just doesn't reconcile. So I don't get that. The other one I've had, I'm going to link to a blog post I wrote on Face ID just over a year ago. So after they announced it, before they published, or before the phone released. And I was getting really weird arguments from people, things like, you shouldn't use biometrics because what if you're driving your car and your friend gets shot by the police and you're filming your friend get shot and then the police come over and they see you're filming and they take your phone and they want you to unlock it so that they can delete the evidence. I'm sort of saying to this person, I remember this discussion. In fact, it might have been a Twitter discussion. I remember saying, if the cops have just shot your friend and now they're wanting to erase evidence, do you really think they're just going to go, oh, they got a PIN, we better just leave them alone? Like, they're going to either shoot you or they're going to take the phone or they're going to do something else. Like, it just, like, none of these arguments seem to reconcile. So anyway, excuse me, to wrap up the Kanye thing, obviously biometrics, good, use biometrics, fall back to PIN, use a good PIN, don't use all zeros or all anything. Like, everyone knows this. Except Cunningham. So, moving on, let's actually talk about some stuff that I have written this week. And this was fun. So, and I'm just looking down at my iPad here. Breaking Jira functions with too many connections. So a little bit of background first. We recently launched the Have I Been Pwned and Mozilla Firefox integration. So Mozilla pushed out what they call Firefox Monitor, which is a service which sits on top of Have I Been Pwned. And it means that anyone can go to monitor.firefox.com. They can go and enter their email address. It can search Have I Been Pwned. And we do this using the K-anonymity model, which Janard Ali at Cloudflare built originally or designed originally for pwned passwords. We're now using this for email address searches as well. Super, super cool stuff. The value proposition for all the people that have been asking over and above Have I Been Pwned alone is that Mozilla has a massive reach of people. They've got hundreds of millions of people using their browser. That means there's a whole bunch of other people that never would have organically come to Have I Been Pwned that get to see if they've been pwned. So that makes a lot of sense for actually increasing the reach and increasing the understanding of data breaches, so on and so forth. So we can do this on-demand search. That's fine. That all sits on top of an Azure function. It runs beautifully, absolutely seamlessly. I don't think we've had any outage whatsoever. If there has, it's just been like ridiculously low percentages of 1% kind of thing. I'm trying to think if there has actually been anything we've noticed. I think from memory, everything on the Azure end has always looked fine, and there's been occasional network connectivity issues between Mozilla and Cloudflare or something of that effect. Anyway, super solid. There is also a notification service, and the way the notification service works is you can go along to Mozilla and say, I would like to subscribe this email address, let me know in the future if I'm impacted in a data breach. Uses the same anonymity model without going into detail here. It's just the first six characters of the SHA-1 hash of the email address. That gets saved in Have I Been Pwned. Then when I load a new data set, such as that massive Apollo one weekend last, so if I sound a little bit hazy, it's like jet lag is not an entirely fun thing. So around about a week ago, when I loaded the Apollo data breach, 126 million records, and what that meant is that there were going to now be a very, very large number of people who have subscribed to Firefox Monitor that need to get notifications. And what happens is I load the data into Have I Been Pwned, and it says, you know, here's the 126 million records. Now, here is what Mozilla is monitoring. Now let's join them together. And then the intersection is how many notifications need to be sent. And I'm not sure if Mozilla are making public how many people have actually subscribed, so I won't sort of disclose that here. It's lots. It's lots and lots and lots. And if you can see from the charts, you can figure out pretty quickly. It's a six-figure number, which is a lot given that they only kicked off the service a few weeks ago. Incidentally, Have I Been Pwned itself, almost 2.2 million subscribers now, which is nice. So anyway, you end up with all of these notifications that need to be sent. And the way that model works is that for every notification that needs to be sent, and to be clear as well, if there are a million people, for argument's sake, that subscribe, it's not a million notifications that I need to send to Mozilla that they can then send onto their subscribers. It's less than that because the K-anonymity model using the first six characters of the SHA-1 hash, of that 1 million people, there are going to be multiple people where the SHA-1 hash of their email address has the same first six characters. So it's actually somewhat less. And to think about it another way, the total number, the maximum number of notifications I'll ever need to send is going to be 16 to the power of 6. No, that's not right. It will be 16 to the power of 6. So it'll be around about 16 million. And the reason why is because we're talking hexadecimal and we've got six different characters that we've got to deal with. So even if there's a billion people that subscribe to this thing, if ever there are, I'm going to have a much bigger problem with scale. But if there were, there would only ever be a maximum of 16 million notifications to send. So there's a whole bunch of notifications that have got to be sent to Mozilla. Now, when I load the data, they all go into a queue. So they all go into an Azure storage queue. They sit there in that queue, and there's a function which is triggered by a new queue item. So that function picks up that queue item, and it makes an HTTPS call to Mozilla's endpoint. Excuse me. So what that means is that if I've got, let's say, 100,000 callbacks that I've got to make to Mozilla, there's going to be 100,000 items in the queue, 100,000 invocations of the function that picks up the queue item, and 100,000 instances where it says, hey, Mozilla, here's a message. Now, functions being what they are, they scale very, very fast to a very, very long way. So what happened is I dumped all these messages into the queue in the space of like 60 seconds or something, and it started spinning up all these instances of the function and just absolutely hammering Mozilla, and I basically knocked the service offline. Sorry, guys. So the graphs I've got here, it's always interesting, I think, to see graphs. The graphs I've got here show a massive ramp up of the number of invocations of the function. So we go from like zero instances of it running to probably 40-something thousand, approaching 50,000, in a very linear fashion. You can see a very nice line here. Ramps up very, very quickly. And what you'll see just above that is the execution time of the functions, and they're sitting at 10 seconds. Average execution time is sitting bang on 10 seconds. And what's actually interesting here is even when there's only a very small number of the functions running, it's still 10 seconds. And the reason why is that Mozilla's endpoint simply wasn't very efficient. And what it meant is that I would make a call to their endpoint and it would take 10 seconds, and then that would exceed the timeout that I'd set on the HTTP client on the .NET side. So basically, my end has got this open connection trying to get a response from Mozilla, gets to 10 seconds, then goes, oh, nothing's going to happen, fail, drop the item back in the queue, it's going to retry again a little bit later on. So from a resiliency perspective, this is good. The problem now, though, is I'm getting this increasing number of different function invocations sitting there with an open connection to Mozilla. And then it broke my Azure function. So this is one of the things I learned. And a lot of the premise of this blog post was, I break stuff, I do screw things up occasionally, and I learn some interesting things, and Have I Been Pwned is a great platform for me to be able to share what I've learned. So what I learned, and this was after getting some very quick help from Microsoft, which was most appreciated, so thank you for that. So what I learned is that in an instance of a function, you can have up to 300 open connections at the same time. If you exceed 300, it may, in fact, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to actually, I'll read exactly what Jeff Holland from Azure wrote here. He said, in the consumption plan today, there's a caveat here because this was yesterday, it's different now today. In the consumption plan back then, there is a limit to 300 active network connections open at one time. If you cross that limit, it locks down the instance for a bit. I see that even though we scaled out your app to a few different instances, many of them crossed the threshold for connections. On one, for example, I see 174 connections at one time to IP address, and then it was Mozilla's IP. So what's happening is because they're taking a long time to respond, and I'm just ramping up, throwing more and more and more messages into the queue, my function's opening up all these connections, waiting for a response. It exceeds 300. The Azure function then gets quote-unquote locked down. What locked down means is that all of the other function endpoints on that same service start not responding. That includes the function endpoints that do things like allow you to search your email address on the front page of Have I Been Pwned, and that also runs the API that many other subscribers use. So basically, it broke all the important parts of Have I Been Pwned. Now, this wasn't good. So it did take Have I Been Pwned down for a period of time. And now, look, I was having breakfast as well with the family at the time, trying not to do the computer things. So I think in total it was like about an hour. And eventually I managed to sort of redeploy to a staging site, swap sites, and by then everything had come good. But we learned a bunch of stuff from it. And I want to sort of talk about what those are, because these are things that other people could possibly make mistakes with as well. Now, one of the most obvious things with the benefit of hindsight was 10 seconds was way too long to leave that connection open. And once everything started executing properly, I found that the function execution times were actually less than 1 second. They were 900 something milliseconds. So when things operate normally, it takes, let's be generous and say a second, to send the request and get a response. So I dropped that function execution time from 10 seconds down to 3 seconds. If I don't get a response in 3 seconds, now it's going to fail, go back in the queue, and then it's going to try again a little bit later. So that was number one. Number two was that I just bombarded Mozilla in one go. Like I just dumped all of these messages and went, okay, like send them as fast as you can. That created a problem for them, which is the same problem I've had before, where there's just a sudden influx of traffic, which is very, very hard to deal with. So what I'm doing now is I'm putting the message in the queue straight away, but I'm randomizing the time at which it becomes visible, somewhere between 0 minutes and I think I said 60 minutes. So every time a message goes in a queue, it will appear somewhere within the next hour, which will trigger the function somewhere within the next hour, which will put the load onto them somewhere within the next hour. So it's going to distribute that load a little bit. Rather than just massively ramping up very early, it's going to spread out over time. So that'll be a bit better for them as well. So there was that. The other thing was I was not using a static HTTP client. I was creating a new instance of the HTTP client every single time the function got invocated, which is not a very good pattern. So I have changed that. And there's a link through there to a Microsoft piece which explains a bit more about why that makes sense and gives me more scale. The other thing that happened is that Microsoft has increased that 300 limit to 600. Not because of this, they were doing it anyway. And that has, I think the way Jeff explained it is he said that has begun the weekend just, or the week just passed. So now we should be in the process of instances getting up to 600 open connections. Now there's sort of a macro observation about this. And it's this. Functions are serverless. Hang on, air quote, serverless. So they're serverless in that they abstract the logical bounds of server infrastructure away from the consumer. So you're not thinking about, do I run at this scale or that scale or whatever? You're just like, hey, just charge me for executions of my code. Beautiful, beautiful premise. What this does, though, is it reminds you that that's not quite how it works when you push the boundaries far enough. There are limits. You can reach thresholds. And the efficiency of your code is actually super, super important here. Now, it's super, super important because you don't want to crash your instance. It's also super, super important because you are paying based on the number of executions and then the duration of the execution and the amount of memory it's using over that time. So the importance of having optimal code is still massively there, not just so you don't crash your instance, but so that you pay less money. So I think that's sort of an interesting philosophical thing. Now, the last thing that I left this blog post on was I showed I have now scaled back the Have I Been Pwned app service, which runs the main site and used to run all the APIs, scaled it back from an S3 instance to an S2 instance, and that has brought my cost back from $379 a month down to half of that. So we're now down to about $189.50 a month. Now that is kind of momentous for me. And you know, look, it's okay, it's almost a couple of $100. I mean, that in itself is important. But I think even more importantly than the money is that by now using functions more extensively, I'm able to scale back that other infrastructure. Because basically all the important stuff that happens on this site now happens in a function. And when we think about the primary website, what does it do? It serves the home page. That gets massively cached by Cloudflare, so there are very, very few requests to the actual origin. It does still do a few other things that I could move over to functions. So there's a bunch of web jobs that run on it. So there are still web jobs that do things like sending email. That's an easy win to move over to a function. So I might do that when I get home. The subscribing for notifications, domain searches, that still happens on the primary website. And what I'm going to keep doing over time is basically just looking at where the resource cost is on that primary app service. And when I say resource cost, the number of executions, how long they take, and gradually moving them over to functions. Because when I move them over to functions, I unburden that primary website. I will possibly be able to scale it back even further later on and save myself another $95 a month, I think it is. And the function side of things is just ridiculously cheap to run. After that Mozilla thing the other day, I had another one of these moments where I went, oh, am I going to have to explain to Kylie that I've just got a massive crazy Azure bill? Because I had like hundreds of thousands of requests sitting there with like 10 second timeouts. So they're sitting there for 10 seconds. And then I went and ran all the numbers again. And I think the whole episode cost like $2 or something like that. So functions are just crazy, crazy, crazy efficiently awesome. So that is really, really good news. I'm going to keep heading in that direction. Now, last thing for a wrap up, Gold Security is sponsoring my blog again this week. So Gold has been there for a long time now. They were definitely there for a good part of last year, as well as many weeks this year as well. So big thanks to Gold Security and their support. I've got to wrap up now because I've got to go and head over to DevFest weekend and do another talk. I'm going to talk more about how everyone is getting pwned. That's going to be a bunch of fun. That's just feels like a very nice community event at the Microsoft campus here in Dallas. So I'm going to go and do that. Next week, I will still be in Dallas. I'm leaving Dallas Friday night local. So I'm going to try and get this blog or this video out a little bit earlier next time before I jump on the plane and come home. So thanks for watching. I hope this was useful and you particularly got something out of those Azure bits. See you guys.